Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. No matter how popular social media gets, no matter how popular paid traffic gets, that there's nothing more powerful than email marketing. And with that, you need powerful email marketing automation. The only service that I trust with my email marketing at this point is ConvertKit. The most powerful thing about email marketing is that it can be automated. Remember that visitor who visited my site and downloaded my sample chapter of my book? Well, chances are that in a couple days they forgot about my book, which means they won't buy a copy. But a well-timed educational email can be enough to bring them back and save the sale. Right now I have an exclusive offer from ConvertKit for you as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener. You can try out ConvertKit and get a 1 month absolutely free. That's a $49 savings to you. Try out ConvertKit today for free for 1 month. Go to hte.io/convert. That's hte.io/convert and get your 1 month free trial right now.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a foolish adventurer, a podcaster, consultant, speaker, and an entrepreneur. I was introduced to him many, many years ago via his podcast, The Foolish Adventure Show, one of the podcasts I listened to while getting my own online business started. He is the founder of the Fuse Community, an online meeting place for entrepreneurs, as well as being the founder of a private mastermind group called Ignite, a group that I have heard nothing but absolutely rave reviews for. For the high-performance entrepreneur, he is also a one-on-one consultant. Now, let's hack Tim Conley. Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by Braintree. You remember your first dollar you made? Now you want to grow and make your millionth or your billionth. Have you found the right payments partner to grow with you? Braintree lets you accept every way to pay, from PayPal to Apple Pay and everything in between. All it takes is one simple integration. And it doesn't matter what currency your customers use, because Braintree lets you accept over 130 of them. To learn more about how you and your company can grow with Braintree, visit braintreepayments.com/hack. That's braintreepayments.com/hack. Check it out now. We are back, another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very special guest I've wanted to talk to for a long time. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, John.
Absolutely my pleasure, Tim. This is going to be an absolute blast.
Well, I hope so. We'll make it at least slightly entertaining for your listeners.
That's all I can ask. All right, Tim, let's jump into this. Tim, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Oh, not quitting. I think that's been the biggest thing for me, is that I've been at this for a long time, going on 17, 18 years, something like that. I have to go and do the math, but about 17, 18 years I've been doing this, and not quitting has been the one thing, because there's always a problem that comes up. And some people just say this problem is the one that's going to stop me. And I look at what the possibilities are, which is go get a job. And that scares the hell out of me, like actually going and working for people and maybe even having to put on a tie, cut my hair and shave. Oh, that'd be terrible. So that's kept me going, just not quitting. And it's, I guess you could call that perseverance if you wanted to be a little more intellectual. just persevering through all the trials and tribulations that come with entrepreneurship, you're going to win eventually.
Yeah. And it's a very succinct answer that really, ultimately, 230 something people have now been on this show. And I guess that's the one trait that all of them exactly share. Everything else can vary as much as you want. But the only reason why everyone is here is because they just didn't give up at some point.
Right. Because they all, we've all faced a failure. We've faced, and in my case, like really embarrassing failure right in the beginning of my career, trying to do a whole .com. I was going to, you know, wrote business plan on a napkin. I was going to get rich back in the 90s. And I didn't know what I was doing. And I just fell flat on my face. And I just didn't quit. I was like, nope, that it's embarrassing. I lost a lot of money. I'm in a lot of debt, but this is not the end of me. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get the life that I know is inside me.
And that's a good clarification. So it's not like you started one thing 17 to 18 years ago and just haven't quit. It's you've started probably hundreds of things, quit tons of things, bounced off ideas, failed, won all kinds of things, but you just kind of keep moving in a direction that you see fit next.
Right, right. That's all you can do, because we don't know what the future holds, and we can start working on an idea that may or may not pan out. We don't know until we see it to completion. And that's either through the completion being that it succeeds and or that it fails. And with succeeding, well, that's not really a completion. That's just the beginning of the next stage. And failure, the same thing. This idea has failed. I can't make it work. So I'm going to go start on the next one.
Right, exactly. Okay, so let's go back if we can, Tim, like 17 years, say. So 17-year younger Tim is there. And as we say, right, I mean, looking back, it often makes way more sense than going forward through it as we're just kind of bouncing off, trying to figure out what we're trying to do, just in life, never mind in business as well.
Right.
But looking back, it often seems the case that entrepreneurs, there's this time in their life when they realize just one of two things, that either they have this calling to make this huge difference in the world, or they find, as mostly seems to be the case, that they just simply cannot work for somebody else anymore. But it's often caused by an event or a time. So could you tell us, Tim, which side of the fence you're on, and then just take us back to when and why this sort of happened to you?
Oh, gosh, it'd have to go way back, because I still have a problem with authority. So it goes way back to childhood. I never really had a whole lot of respect for authority, and because they just had arbitrary rules and I didn't like it, and I wanted to control my life even as a kid. And I realized that if I was going to have the life I wanted, I had to take control of it. I couldn't leave it up to someone else. So that put me on a path towards entrepreneurship, even though I didn't know that's what I was going to become. I never, like a 7-year-old kid, I never said, you know what I'm going to be? I'm going to be an entrepreneur or a business owner. Yeah, I never said that. I was going to be an astronaut and also an archaeologist and dig up dinosaur bones at 7. But as I grew up, I realized testing out jobs, even the military. I went and served in the military, and I was terrible at that because I had to ask questions all the time. I couldn't just follow orders. And, you know, for someone who has a problem with authority, military is not the best place for you. And
no.
And so I struggled there, but it let me grow up, but it also let me see that there's certain elements of running an organization that I needed to know. And on top of that, I found out what I didn't like, how I didn't want to live my life. And that just pushed me further and further towards figuring out how to live life on my terms. And in a modern world, that means make money. So I had to figure out how to do that on my terms.
Yeah. So this is a common path. So the kid who's just hates authority because of absolutely arbitrary rules, validated by because I said so.
Right.
Is usually the answer to the questioning kid. So going through this, I think when you say like you're 7 years old and you weren't like, I'm going to be a business person or an entrepreneur, two things kind of come out to me. First of all, I find it really odd that we, even just entrepreneurship as a term, right? I don't think it was as ubiquitous, as popular as it is now.
Oh, no.
Even in the last 5 years. And I think even like, so from 7 to say 17, even to 25, I can think of myself, I thought of business as like a businessman, like you wore a suit, carried a briefcase, all this sort of stuff. I didn't realize it as creating a life you want and just building things to create that life so you didn't have to live somebody else's life, which that's why I think I really kind of gravitate towards entrepreneurship. But I feel that we've overblown it at our younger age, and sometimes even just people all the way through life, they overblow what entrepreneurship actually is. So could you like just give me what you see as a definition of just pure entrepreneurship?
Oh, gosh. I like going back to the guy who came up with the term, I think is Jean-Baptiste Key or something like that. I believe that's who it was, who said entrepreneurship is taking something of lower value and turning it into higher value. And that's what I see we do. People who have an idea has no value. Go try to sell your idea. Not going to happen. Ideas don't have any value. It's when we take that idea and make it reality, does it become a higher value? When you're able to do that and someone is willing to exchange value for that thing, you're an entrepreneur.
Nice.
It's that simple. There's someone else gives you value in the form of currency for the thing that you manifested from an idea. That's entrepreneurship.
Nice. It's not about funding. It's not about IPOs. It's not about briefcases. It's not about meetings. It's not about processes. It's literally just creating value from that idea.
Right.
I love it. I love it. And I think that's what we need. I think we need to understand that. And I think that especially when people haven't started, that they've overblown it as it's this something, this big amorphous thing that I will never be able to get my head around or my hands around and just get a hold of it. But it's really just that.
Right. When we go in with misconceptions, then we end up spending a lot of time doing things that we shouldn't be doing. A lot of people will go out and get business cards. They'll build a website. They'll buy a desk for their, and even if they're going to be at home, right? I got to buy a desk. I have to have the trappings of what I believe entrepreneurship is, what business is, for me to feel like I'm in business. When the one thing that actually puts you in business is going out and selling something to a person.
Nice. As soon as you said business cards, I just like get this like cringy feeling from my 20s of making business cards. But it's true. And I really honestly feel that it was just a mindset shift of business that has made me like be able to do stuff even and like accomplish things now because I had that wrong feeling. So what you're saying is you don't need the desk. You don't need the business cards. You don't need the letterhead. You don't need the office to make sales to clients.
That is correct. You don't need a laptop. You don't need anything other than something of value that someone else wants to give you money for.
And okay, so like you can call somebody, you can email somebody and make an offer of a sale of an idea that you've had.
Yes.
Rather than anything else.
Yes. A friend, he told me about how he was able to quickly generate $10,000 a month with his marketing consulting business. This was several years ago, 4 years ago, I think. And he made up these really, really terrible direct mail letters, like a three letter sequence. And they were cheesy. And it was an offer to get on the phone with him. Normally $2.99, but you get it for free if you act now, kind of thing. And he put in his cell phone number and said, this is really my cell phone number. Call it and I will answer it. And that was the start of his business. He mailed that to like 100 businesses that he had identified in his area as potential people who would pay for making more money from the marketing dollars they were already spending. He mailed that out. and they called him on the phone, on his cell phone. That was his, that was the extent of his business. 100 letters and a cell phone. And they were terrible letters.
But he's a marketing consultant. They must have been good.
Well, yeah. He within a month, he had already generated $10,000 in sales, and that was recurring. So that, just because he just took action, he did not build a website. He did not go get a phone. You know, he already had a cell phone, so just use that. And that's what he did.
Was he a definite marketing expert though already?
Yes, he had skills. He had already been in a family business, did the marketing for a family business, and was looking at a way to go off on his own and kind of stretch his wings outside of the family business. And even though they trusted him with the marketing and everything, and he did a good job there, he wanted to, start his own thing. So he took those skills that he had gained working for his family and like reading direct response marketing stuff and applying it in the family business to now going off and doing it for other people. And, but he, even with that, even with like the successes he had, he could have still built a website. He could have done all these other things instead of ask for the sale. And he went directly to asking for the sale instead of making a whole bunch of trappings of business.
So why do we make the trappings of business? Why do we usually go for all the other stuff before asking for the sale?
It's easier. It's not scary. when you can go out and buy a desk from the office supply store, it feels like you're accomplishing something. And it feels like you're moving forward in your goals, but it has absolutely nothing to do with your goals. It's a form of procrastination, because the one thing you actually need is a customer. And we're not trained on how to get customers. No one goes off and does that unless you happen to fall into a sales job, have a parent who shows you the ins and outs of selling. Most people don't have it. And culturally, salespeople are vilified. So why would you want to become one of those people that everyone hates? Right? So we do everything we possibly can to not have to interact with a human being. One of the best things that's happened to the startup world is Stephen Blank's, yeah, I believe it's Blank or Blankenship, can't remember. It has the phrase of get out of the building, and lean startup and all that is getting people to go talk to their prospective customers before they start building an app. Because developers, introverts by nature, most of them prefer sitting behind a computer writing code than hoping someone will buy what they finish than to actually go out and see if anyone wants to buy what they can make.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It's because it's easier. And getting out of the building absolutely makes sense, right? It's really getting that idea in front of real potential customers as quickly as possible to have them just tear it apart for you and hopefully rebuild it.
Right.
To something that people actually want, not what you think that they want while you're off buying a desk and posting pictures of it on Instagram.
But the real thing people are worried about is not that people will reject their idea or their product. It's that they see that rejection as a personal rejection. These people hate me. And that fear of being rejected, being ostracized from society, is one of the things that keeps most people from succeeding in business.
Is there any way to overcome that without just going through it enough times?
Brute force. Brute force is the only thing that I've noticed that can get you through it.
It is.
It's just constant exposure. I was one of those people in the early days. My first business failed miserably. And I realized I didn't know how to get a customer. So I went out to learn how to sell. And so I went looking for sales training programs, not ones that you just bought a course and they taught you some stuff, but one that you had to actually do the job as you go through the learning process. And I went through a couple of them, and One of the guys who was teaching me, one of the first things they had had us do in this one trainee program was cold calling, which is one of the, it is a terrible form of generating business, but it works if you do enough dialing. Spam, email spam works if you send enough emails, right? It's the same thing with calling people on the phone, just dialing and dialing and dialing. And one of the things that they, and they did this was to overcome all the different forms of instant rejection that you get in cold calling. And it, and to realize this person has no idea who you are. They didn't reject you as a human being. They rejected an annoyance, an interruption is what they rejected. And it has nothing to do with you. And then so you learn little techniques about if you're going to dial 500 phone numbers today, you don't put down the phone. As soon as you pick it up, you don't ever put it down until you're done dialing. Because if you set it down, that phone gets really heavy to pick back up again and go through the rejection all over again. And it sucks. It's a terrible process. But that, and so I went through it through brute force. But I think a lot of other people just enough exposure to realize that people aren't rejecting you as a person. They're rejecting the offer. They don't want it. It doesn't fit their needs. They don't understand it. It's not the right time for them. All these things, that it's all about them. They're making a choice for themselves. It has nothing to do with you. And once you get past that fear of rejection, and it doesn't ever go away. It doesn't go away with me. Most of the people that I know, even great salesmen, still are have that sense of, you know, I might get rejected this time. And it still sits there, but you can learn how to control your fear as opposed to succumbing to it.
Yeah, I think that's the crucial part. And it's like becoming good or better or an expert at anything is you got to put in the time.
Yes.
But knocking on doors, phoning phone calls from phoning people randomly, those things, all they do is they just condense the process of most people reaching out to somebody once a week. Now you've done 500 weeks in one day. Just do it 500
right.
times. It just speeds it up. It doesn't make it easier. It just speeds it up and condenses the learning curve.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the struggle of getting through and getting to where you are now. 17 years into this, you are way more comfortable with being uncomfortable, whether that's with failure or being turned down, or just not necessarily knowing what to do all the time. So let's turn to projects if we can, Tim.
Okay.
This can be like a loose term, whether it's a project within your business or a new business or something that you want to start right now. I know that having this time in the business that I'm sure ideas come through your inbox, ideas come to you in the shower, when you're walking, whatever you're doing, we get a lot of ideas and they are exactly worthless, like you said, until we take the action on them. But you still, as a dreamer, as an entrepreneur, you want to take action on ideas, but you need to sort through. So I would love to know, Tim, if you have a written process or just a gut sort of instinct, but what is the process you go through right now yourself to determine when an idea is worth your time, energy, and resources to execute on?
When someone's willing to give me money for it.
But what if it's just one? Like, what if somebody just, like, I could walk up to you and say the craziest thing that I want you to do this for me, Tim, and I'll pay you $1,000. Are you just going to be like, well, that's my new business. I'm just going to do this now for everyone?
I do have a mental process that I developed through years of running my own companies where customers will ask for things. And in my early part of my career, I just said, yes, right? That's money.
I do, yeah.
Yes, I will do it. And then I ended up with like all kinds of products and services to offer and a mess in operations because we had so many promises to fulfill that profitability was essentially nil. So I learned you can't say yes to everything, even though someone's willing to hand you money right now. So then I looked at that and said, okay, when can you say yes to a customer? When a customer comes to you and says, I would like you to do, so I evaluate it by one, will I be able to sell this to my current customers? not just this one, but can I go back to all the customers I already have and sell it to them? If I think a good 20, 30% of my current customer base will buy this thing also, then I'll consider it. Then the next stage is, can I do it profitably? And will I be able to expand it beyond my customer base? Is it so narrow that only my customers will want this? So if I can't get my other customers to buy it, and I can't do it profitably, and I can't expand it out to the general market, then I say no. I turn down that money because it just doesn't make sense, because all it'll do is add an additional promise I have to keep in my business. And that makes operations completely complex. So that's how I evaluate customer stuff coming to me. Starting a new business, before the show started, we were chatting about this. I'm starting a new company, tentatively called Leaders Within. That's the name of the program. And my clients, the entrepreneurs that I work with, I help them move to the next stage in their business. You know, they're low $1 million companies and they want to become, you know, $10 million companies. And I help them make that transition to become the leader of their company. Well, they started asking me, well, we have a lot of new managers. Can you do what you've done for us, for them? Because that would have a gigantic impact inside of our company. And that scared the hell out of me because I had no idea how to do that. I knew how to do what I do, and I know how to get an entrepreneur who's in charge of the company to make the changes necessary in a company to get to the next stage. I know how to do that. So then they kept asking, it's like, could you do this for us? And I started looking into it, contacted some people that I know, asked them if they, and I knew they had certain skill sets that would be valuable for this program. I asked them, would you like to come in and do this? Let's do a pilot program. Let's see if we can actually get this to work. And we've been at this now for about 3 months with a few clients, and it seems to be working really well. So then I started doing my research, started asking other people that aren't my clients, would you want your new managers to go through a formal training program, a formal coaching program that turned them into a leader inside your company? And they all said yes. And I was like, okay, well, now it comes down to the money. How much are you willing to pay? And if they're able to pay enough that I can make a profit, and it seems like the general market is going to want this, well, guess what? I'm starting a new business this summer.
So it 20 to 30% of your current customers wanted this, and you can do it profitably. Therefore, you're running.
Right. That's the minimum.
Of course.
Right.
But then it's enough to run with it. And so really it seems to be more of a process. And I'm only actually coming to terms with this in the last, I'm going to say even 6 months myself, is that it's more of a process of filtering than it is of like creating ideas, coming up with the idea. And I think it used to always be for me, like, I always just like, what's the next idea? What's the next thing I can build? What's the next thing? But it's all of a sudden, it's just like, there's ideas everywhere. And like people like with offers, like we should partner in this, we should do this, we should do this. And then it's just like, oh, and at first you're right. It's just like, yes, yes, let's do this. I want to do that. But then it's like, I can't do all this. Who am I kidding? It's insane. And it's really that process of finding your filter. Find, like you said, 20 to 30% existing minimum. And then is it profitable? And can you extend it beyond your customers?
Right. And then there's one additional step for those who have been in business for a while, like myself. So the one thing that someone may have caught listening to this is that the new business is targeted into the same market where my current business is, because I'm able to get more profitability by staying in the same market, because I already have authority. I already have reach. I already have the ability to profitably get customers in that market. So then all I'm doing is offering a new product into the same market.
Because every new customer you get for your main original business has a potential to trickle down to hiring your other business now, your new one.
Correct. Correct. And vice versa. Right. If I go out and get clients just for the Leaders Within program, a good chance that the executives running that company will want the executive coaching that I do.
And at what point when you're thinking this idea was brought to you for Leaders Within and then thinking about whether this is a right move, and you're true, like they work together and so they can kind of feed off of each other. But at what point did you think that, but what if I put all that time, energy, and resources just into your original consulting business? And just like, I have this, it's in line, it works, it's proven. What if I just like force all that energy into that to grow that even further? Could you equate the same revenue, or do you know what I mean? Or is it because you can have less customers now, but hopefully more cost?
More revenue, right? Fewer customers, more revenue, which is definitely one of my mantras. A little of both. So I like doing what I do. And that's why I went looking for the right people to put into the Leaders Within program. Because I'm not the right person for that. I'm a good person to be the spokesperson of it, but I'm not the right person to do it. But then we started looking around at the possible leadership training industry, I guess you could call it. And the Leaders Within program seems to have the biggest possible reach and probably will surpass anything that I could make in my own executive coaching program.
Oh, so you're not even really directly a part of this besides getting it business and doing it. So it's not really just you spreading your like self thinner and just like, well, I'm going to coach over here and I'll also coach over here now.
Right, right. No, not doing
totally
that.
Totally see it now. Otherwise, I was just like, well, why didn't you just keep coaching there, but push it harder and maybe generate more revenue there, more customers. But
right. Well, then that's just more work.
It is. Yeah, well, that's what I was wondering, right? Tim.
I don't want to do that.
Now we're getting to the essence of it, aren't we?
Right, right. So by building a company, I'm able to have greater impact in the world. And so then this is also having repercussions into what I do and looking at how to remove me from some of the coaching that my executive coaching program does. Because I still like doing coaching one-on-one, love it. I like doing group coaching too. It's fun. I enjoy that. But I don't want it to be the end-all be-all of my life. So I am now turning even my executive coaching program into one where it's not 100% me.
Wow. I didn't know this. And so this is interesting. We need to follow this path a bit with this new company now, because I know you coach newer companies, right? And getting that like, getting entrepreneurs to think like the CEO of their company.
Right.
Which is a real struggle for new entrepreneurs. And now you are literally, we're sitting right here. We're at a very lucky spot to be at the very forefront of you launching a new company.
Right.
What is involved in this new company? Like either from an operations perspective or a systems perspective, but what's sort of involved before this company even sort of launches, as you say, this summer? What are you actually setting up this company like?
Oh, do you want the marketing answer or the real one?
I want the real answer because I remember I read something to you by you not that long ago about how companies like in growth stage, like really new companies, shouldn't be focusing on processes.
Right.
CEOs shouldn't, right? They should be, I think it was focusing on growth. And so I find that really intriguing and interesting. And so now I want to see how you're doing it.
So the real answer is lots of running around screaming and frantic hand waving. What am I doing?
Okay, fair enough.
After that happens, then it's figuring out, well, what's the product? Because I had people ask me for developing coaching for their new managers. And in the process of developing a pilot program for that, well, there's a lot of ambiguity to it. And so then the main thing that comes up is, well, how do you prove that you did anything? Like that you actually affected change in our company, especially if we're going to pay you a lot of money for it. And so then we had to figure out what's the next stage of developing this as a product. And I like using the word product versus, say, service, because, you know, conceptually, our brains were able to say a product is a finite thing, whereas a service, well, that could be infinite. So, you know, it could have a broad range. We don't want that. We want to be able to treat this thing as a product. So how do we deliver this product? And so now it's a matter of narrowing down what we're offering and showing that it actually works. So now we're in product building phase with this pilot program. So it goes from just experiments out in the market where people are actually paying for it. And then we're going to fix the product. And then from that, from having a better product, going from MVP to something that is more cohesive, then we go out and sell it to more people and get more feedback. And then just keep that process going. Sell to more, fix the product, make it better, make it what the market really wants. Then go out and sell it some more. That's the process. And we don't know what the standard operating procedures are going to be yet. The goal is to grow so fast that anything that we come up with today will be obsolete in 2 months.
It's not worth just iterating on top of. It's a revolution, right, not an evolution.
Right. And fast growing companies, if they're spending their time creating processes early in their company, that means they're not growing fast, because they can sit down and write out a procedure for something that in maybe 6 months would be obsolete. You would just eliminate. It wouldn't even be in your company anymore. A lot of people are focused on those kind of things, as opposed to, if we grow really fast, we won't even have time to develop processes. So we grow fast, get the money in the company, then go back and make sure the company doesn't collapse on itself.
Right, right. And so that's always a hard thing to know, right? Because it's, I guess this is probably truly the value of hiring an executive coach like yourself, because us trying to be the entrepreneur, trying to grow our businesses quickly, but also needing to be self-aware enough so that we don't kid ourselves. Like, is my company actually growing as fast as I think it is? Or do I want to pretend that it is, so I'm not going to do processes? Or am I just going to focus on trying to grow it faster, but it's not? But I'm still not good. You know what I mean? It's, but then, right, you could be like, dude, right, come on, man. Like, I can see what you're doing. And no, you should be actually creating processes because you have the time right now. Your massive, right, growth is over.
So I use a rule of thumb to be able to get people to understand where they should be focusing on process versus focusing on additional growth. And there's a great book, if you can get a copy of it, which is really hard to do, which is Ready, Fire, Aim by Michael Masterson. So he divided up businesses into 4 stages: 0 to 1 million, 1 to 5 million, I believe, and then 5 to 50 million, and then 50 million and up. I only work with entrepreneurs who are in the 2 early stages of growth, which is stage 1 and stage 2. We get them through those 2 stages. They get off to stage 3. I want them to have outgrown me, and they go off and, you know, work with McKinsey or something. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'd like to happen with my clients. So I focus on those 2 early stages. And that 0 to 1 million is a good indicator. Like, if we don't get to $1 million within a certain amount of time, we're probably screwing off. Mm-hmm. And most businesses could get to $1 million. In the United States, about 85% of all U.S. businesses never generate $1 million in revenue in a year.
Wow.
Ever. Right? But the markets that they're in, most of them are in markets that would sustain $1 million or more in revenue. So why are they not hitting $1 million in revenue? because they're doing a bunch of other things that aren't related to making money, which is going out and getting customers.
That's why they need coaches.
Right, right. Because you think you're doing business, right? You went out and got that desk. You think you're doing business. You went out and got business cards. You think you're doing business. And it feels like there's forward momentum. But the forward momentum is measured by revenue, measured by customers initially. Eventually, it's measured by profit. But that first growth stage is about getting the revenue coming in.
Yeah, fair enough. And you say the 0 to 1 million stage. How close to zero should a company be when they should be looking for an executive coach?
I don't take on clients under 300,000 in revenue. And even then, it's really iffy. If they've got funding, that it's easier because they're going to need a team.
Right.
And they need to start putting people together. You can't be an executive if you're the only one.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It's self-employment then. You're not an executive because there's no other employees. But once you've gotten a small team, well, now you need to start learning how to run that team. One of the biggest things that I've seen with a lot of early stage people, especially in the low hundreds of thousands, and I've even seen this into the $1 million and $2 million range, where the entrepreneur, the founder of the company, is still not acting like an executive and has essentially everyone in the company reporting directly to him or her. And then they wonder why their lives are a frantic mess. It's because you have so many people who are depending upon you directly to answer even minuscule issues, as opposed to letting your team operate. And one of the other things they do is not let, especially with remote companies and people who use VAs and outsourcing and all that, they don't let those people talk to each other. It's not a team. It's just individual people who are doing a job and sending stuff back to the founder. And then the founder takes that information and shifts it over to another person. And so everybody's building little pieces in isolation, and none of them have an idea of what the bigger picture is. And then what happens is the founder doesn't even know what the bigger picture is anymore, because all they're dealing with is fragmented pieces like a jigsaw puzzle. I got this piece here, I got that piece there, and then they try to put it together later. But if you have a team working together, we have to get away from the puzzle metaphor, because it's not pieces anymore.
Right.
It's more of more fluid. Things are flowing more at that stage.
If this, yeah.
And so that's one of the things that I work with, is getting those people together, get them to actually use the people they're hiring. Even VAs and other outsourcing and contracting, is to get those people to talk to each other. And then you start getting the power of all those brains moving in one direction.
Right. So project management, communication tools, is that the basic of getting them together? When they're VAs at that small scale and they're remote?
Well, that would be the functional side of it. The, you know, how do you do it? Well, you get them on Skype, let them talk to each other, get them on, go to webinar, go to meeting, and let everybody talk to each other, get on Slack. You know, those are functional kind of things, but the sheer act of just letting them speak to each other.
Yeah, not blocking them.
Right? Removing yourself as the bottleneck is the very first step. And that scares the shit out of a lot of people. Because they want control. They feel that entrepreneurship's scary enough that if they let these other people that I don't really know very well, they may not do it the way I want it done. And so then this whole thing could come crashing down on top of me. So I can't let go. And then that act of gripping tight prevents the company from growing.
Wow. I love it. I love it. And it's so true. And it's so true. And so many people, I think, get stuck in that right there as the bottleneck, and just not being able to just get over themselves enough to let go of it and actually allow their company to grow.
And people realize that their employees and their contractors and all that are replaceable. They understand that. The one thing they cannot understand is that as a founder, you are 100% replaceable too. And eventually your company will be much healthier if it gets to a stage where it can replace you. You may not step aside, but that the company itself can run without you, it's a much healthier company, a much healthier company culture than the one that requires the founder to still be in the front.
Yeah, yeah. Very well said, very well said. Tim, this has been an absolute blast. I just want to thank you so much for stopping by. I've wanted to have this conversation for a long time. We've got to talk about your business just in passing and this new business. You also have an excellent podcast out, and I would like for my listeners to know about it. So could we take some time right now just to tell people where they can find out more about your business and where they can track you and your podcast down online?
The easiest way is to go to tim411.com. It redirects to my site. It's the shortest possible URL I could get ages ago. And just go to tim411.com. Goes to my blog where you can read articles on being a leader in your company. You can also listen to the Tim411 podcast, which is kind of a Q&A insight into all the problems that my clients have. I turn that into a short, digestible podcast that you can learn from.
Excellent. I love it. So I'll skip all these other links that I had written down here. Tim411.com is a much easier link.
Oh, yeah. Much easier.
Exactly. Exactly. And there's a Facebook group, is there not?
Yes, I have a Facebook group for entrepreneurs that started off as an experiment, and that should be a lesson for everyone listening, that entrepreneurship starts off with an experiment. And it's called The Forge, and you can find that at, Facebook.com/groups/The Forge group. Yeah, it's pretty
totally,
weird.
Yeah, but I'll have a link for it. And so it's an excellent Facebook group full of budding entrepreneurs. And I'll link to it in the show notes under Tim Conley. So you can find it there, track it down and see if Tim will let you into the group. But otherwise, you can reach out to Tim at tim411.com. So once again, Tim, thanks so much. I've wanted you on this show literally since episode one. I finally took the, I don't know how I didn't reach out to you sooner, but I finally did. And I'm really, really glad that you said yes and came on and shared with us today.
Yeah. And hopefully your listeners got a lot of value out of this.
I can't see how they didn't, because I know I did.
All right. Perfect. Perfect. Thanks for having me on, John.
That was a lot of fun. You just witnessed me checking off another box of people I've always wanted to speak to. Tim Conley. I can picture listening to the Foolish Adventure Show. So Tim doesn't do the Foolish Adventure Show anymore, but you can still find it on iTunes. Excellent, excellent, excellent show. And I can still picture walking my dog in this city, actually a neighborhood we used to live in, and listening to that show. I remember this one interview, but anyways, it's an excellent show, and I finally got to speak to him. So you were just a witness to that. And what a conversation it was. Going back through, listening to it again, really, really enjoying it the second time, and trying to pick out something, just see if something just sort of stood out to me. And so I went through, and there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 things that Tim said that I went back and listened to. And so I went back again, and I got it down to 5 things. Then I went again, I got to 4, then I got to 3, and then I got it to 2. So I had to go back one more time just to see if something was there that I was missing. And it was so clear that last time I went through it. It was that one thing that Tim said that was just so very, very clear. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
But the real thing people are worried about is not that people will reject their idea or their product. It's that they see that rejection as a personal rejection. These people hate me. And that fear of being rejected, being ostracized from society, is one of the things that keeps most people from succeeding in business.
And that's the hack. Tim, Tim, Tim. I love this. And it seems on the surface that maybe it's an oversimplification. But if you scratch that surface and go a little bit deeper, it absolutely isn't. And success in business obviously comes from entrepreneurship, as we've been discussing it, is the creation of something out of nothing. Therefore, I believe that you cannot create something without it having a little part of you within that, because you are part of that creation process, whether that's software, whether that's a book, whether that's a report, whether that's a podcast, whether that's a service-based business, part of you is included in that. To do that, it's like an artist. When you create something from yourself and then put it out to the world can not like it. The world can hate it. And this fear of being then ostracized and sort of, I guess, laughed at and mocked is kind of the discussion that he's getting to, right? It's not so much just that people will hate your idea, it's that you'll actually be sort of mocked for that idea and for putting it out there. It's when we get started, how oftentimes I did this myself, I sort of hid what I was creating from like my friends, like quote unquote friends that I went to high school with and hang out with on Facebook. I wouldn't promote sort of my businesses there because it was sort of, it seemed incongruent with who I was. And it wasn't until I got comfortable with that and made these products and these creations, such as this podcast itself, more congruent with who I actually am and made it more of an extension of myself. Not only did the business become more successful, but it's allowed me now to overcome that fear of putting that idea out there, putting that product out there, putting that service out there, putting that creation of something out of nothing out there into the world. I agree absolutely, Tim, that this is, it's that paralysis we get from this that is probably one of the biggest contributors to people not succeeding in business and in life and just doing the things that you truly feel matters. Tim, thank you very, very much. Well, that was an absolute blast. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website. Stop by there, check out Tim, and then there'll be links to Tim's sites as well as Tim's podcast for you, so they are easy for you to track down. Hacktheentrepreneur.com/review if you would like to leave me a review right now on iTunes. That's a special link, hacktheentrepreneur.com/review, that will take you directly to the iTunes review page. I would absolutely appreciate it. It would help so much. It's been fun. We went a little bit longer today than usual, but you know, sometimes these conversations are just damn worth it. All right, it's been fun. Thank you so very much. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.